The blue virus. It's not very cold, it's just too warm.
Thank you.
Okay, so then let us start. Are you ready now? Okay, thank you very much. Without much ado, we shall have to get into the hearing. But in front of me, I've got one apology from Ms. Jane Manganyi, and then the other one is Honorable Bilavasi. Both of them, members of the committee.
And from staff, Ms. Ndun.
Okay, so staff is Ms. Ndun. So, honorable members, our esteemed guests,
good morning.
From PICC, we have Ms. Kailash Banner and her delegation. And from tourism, we have Ms. Musupia and Mr. Sibego, together with the support staff, Mr. Terrence, and Ms. Fanniger. As we are dealing with this issue of infrastructure development, I think it is important for us to contextualize the scenario. Here we are struggling for a better quality of life for all. We are looking towards the National Development Plan with more jobs, with a higher growth, and so forth. So coming from where we are, it would be important to explain the role as a committee that we are playing, because it is oversight over the Department of Tourism, whose aim is to promote and support the growth of an equitable, competitive, and sustainable tourism sector, enhancing its contribution to national priorities. So as we engage each other, let us all have our sights on the aim of the department, and then we shall then be in a position to understand each other. As far as infrastructure development is concerned, we are looking as to whether this PICC and the projects that you undergo will promote tourism growth, whether it will promote access to new attractions, and thirdly, whether new possibilities might emerge that would unveil heritage sites of heritage value, be it historical heritage, be it national natural heritage. So, if so, then are we having a person or a structure that is conducive to identifying those opportunities for tourism that may emerge as we are going on with PICC? And then if so, what are those structures? Is each project having a mechanism to represent the interests of tourism wherever we go? For instance, you may build a road from east to the west and so forth. So as you go there, are we having in some of the projects at critical stages people that can identify what is of interest to tourism besides other distinct other spheres of government? And if you have featured tourism in your document, we would like to know where tourism exactly is located, so that we make sure that as we move forward with our infrastructure development, we optimize the gain to government towards a better quality of life for all, which includes growth, rural development, and so on. So without much ado, over to you, Ms. Pana.
And this morning, my colleague, the family introducer, Pumela Sandela, is from the Economic Development Department and works in the Economic Policy Branch. And together we'll be taking you through the presentation. Chair, this morning, thank you for setting the context of this very important discussion. And if I may say, the PICC is probably poised as one of the most integral and important structures that has the possibility of leapfrogging development in South Africa in ways that otherwise may not have been possible through the fast-tracking of infrastructure development, as Chair has rightly mentioned. But in that, we also have to be mindful of what other opportunities these infrastructure development plans and the specific may open up in terms of deepening economic development and improving jobs and growth for our country, for the benefit of all our citizens. This morning, Chair, we will take you through a number of aspects of the activities of the PICC and its scope of work. We'll start off by taking the scene around what the PICC's terms of reference are and what its governance structure is, and sometimes that doesn't get understood very well because it's not as highly profiled as the work of the strategic integrated project. So we'll take you through that. We look at the spatial mapping exercise that was undertaken by the PICC to determine the needs in the country and what has actually done show up. And I think in looking at these spatial maps, as well as the areas of need around infrastructure development and services, which continue to remain one of the most pressing problems for our country, we need to be mindful of the prioritization of major infrastructure projects, which Pumela will go through in terms of the 18 steps. We look at what enablers and opportunities there are previously, and then the impetus to drive job creation and industrialization for jobs which grow, but also in ways that governments actually directly looks at the interaction with the economy of the country and through direct work opportunities. We look at the project framework as well as the implementation arrangements here. I think in also just setting the context here, when we look at the work of the strategic integrated project, and the acronym for that is SIP, so if you hear me say SIP, famously it's around the strategic integrated projects of which there are 18, a number of opportunities do exist for tourism. We need to be mindful that some of them are strictly large infrastructure projects. So for example, where South Africa is building a huge manganese center plant, there may not be very many direct opportunities for tourism. But on the other hand, if you're looking at the Wild Coast N2 highway, which is going to go from one end to the other and link the port, that may open up opportunities for tourism investments, may unlock new opportunities. The other example may be building a huge dam. And as we know, there are lots of tourism opportunities around things like dams, hotels, tourism, sport and recreation. So all of those things need to be borne in mind. So while it doesn't feature implicitly in a SIP, perhaps the department and the committee with your guidance can actually inform where those tourism opportunities can be unleashed. Here, in terms of the PITC terms of reference structure, the terms of reference of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission are basically set by cabinet. As members are aware and as Chair has pointed out, there are numerous challenges that South Africa experiences in terms of infrastructure development, some of them financial, the others technical and skill-based, and then even others around looking at regulatory issues. And as a response, our president with cabinet established the PICC in 2012 with the specific aim of fast-tracking large-scale infrastructure development and more so coordinating decision-making around which are strategic projects and how are they selected, looking at their planning and their implementation, but more so coordinating and integrating delivery across government departments. So instead of infrastructure development being planned and implemented as standalone departmental assets, the PICC seeks to integrate and coordinate so that the multiplier effect can be felt in the economy. Its mandate is also not just short-term here. It has a 20-year vision and seeks to look at a 20-year pipeline of projects. So it's not only about short-term gains, but about long-term planning. And as we know, Chair, infrastructure is critical to a huge range of social and economic benefits, of which I'm sure the committee is very soundly aware. But overall, it's about looking at using infrastructure as a springboard and a coalescence point for bringing together things like economic development and human settlement integration, promoting jobs which go through not only foreign direct investment, but also around mobilizing resources internally within the country, increasing our tax base. So there are a number of spin-offs to looking at infrastructure development. In terms of the PICC governance structure, the PICC consists of a number of tiers. We first look at the council, the PICC council, which is chaired by our president. The second is management committee, which is chaired by Mr. Quincy. Third is the PICC secretariat. And then there's the technical task team, which basically looks at the technical skills required to implement these large-scale projects in ways that harness the strength of each discipline. We also then have sub-coordinators here. There are distinct roles and responsibilities for each of the tiers. The PICC Council, for example, basically consists of cabinet, it consists of premiers and of executive layers. And the council's responsibility, and they meet quarterly, is to consider the performance reports of the strategic integrated project and the dashboard, so looking at progress as it unfolds. We also report to cabinet and deal with the policy arms around changes to policy when and where they are required. The PICC Management Committee Chair comprises a number of key ministries, and MANCO focuses on unlocking the challenges experienced by the specific SIPs. So if, for example, there's a challenge around an environmental impact assessment, that sometimes takes up to 5 years. The PICC MANCO will look at how easy such challenges can be, they can be fast-tracked or side-stepped in creative ways and look at the regulatory frameworks around that as well. then the PICC secretariat, and like any other secretariat, it's concerned with the day-to-day work and running of the PICC around the specific projects, and it oversees the work of the technical task team. Here, the technical task team, the technical task team here basically comprises skills and competence drawn from across government departments and public agencies. And I think that is where the PICC is quite unique. It looks at mobilizing domestic talent and talent within government in terms of planning and implementing huge infrastructure projects. The PICC technical team supports the implementation agencies or the sub-coordinators, which for example are state-owned enterprises like AFCOM, like Transnet, like TCTA or the Trans-Caledonian Transport Authority. So those are the coordinators and owners. And the work of the infrastructure project actually gets implemented by the sub-coordinators with support from the technical council. Here we've gone through what the responsibilities of the governance structure is. But just in terms of meeting regularity, the PICC Council, chaired by President, meets quarterly. And they at the quarterly meeting, the dashboard or progress reports are presented, and the oversight over the work is there. MANCO meets fortnightly, and the Technical Council and Secretariat provide reports on a regular basis for progress updates. The Secretariat as well meets fortnightly in preparation for ANCO and also looks at overseeing the technical task team's work. In terms of the technical task team, I think it could be described as the engine room of the PICC. Am I right? It really looks at those functions which allow the PICC to operate in a very systematic way. And that includes things like, because the PICC is at so many different tiers and essentially coordinated, there needs to be functions for communication and coordination with the public stakeholder liaison, not just internally within government departments, but externally with the SOEs as well as the public. Looks at project level monitoring, spend and various overruns, construction updates, regulatory approval, and deals with the legitimacy of all the infrastructure projects. Yeah, I think, and then the funding of the PICC is critical to understand. Internationally, we've seen and experience has demonstrated that the benefit of investing in infrastructure are manifold. It includes things like unlocking economic opportunities. We've seen economies of things like Indonesia and Jakarta where infrastructure is invested in, there is a lot of positive spin-offs, including maximizing our investment in infrastructure through job rich growth. We look at improving domestic resource mobilization, increasing taxes and taxation revenues. We look at attracting foreign direct investment. Thank you. And all of this is critical to why infrastructure is so important in terms of its funding. There's a number of creative ways, honorable members, around how infrastructure and particularly large infrastructure projects can be financed. We all know they run into the tune of sometimes billions of rand. And you know, we need to look at how economically viable it is. There's always issues around how much budget is available. And PICC and Canvas has applied their mind to how it is that you unlock financial flows through creative means. These include things like accessing retirement funding, using the balance sheets of state-owned enterprises more creatively, because that has been the full use previously to look at infrastructure investment in our country. Looking at the development finance institution that we have in our country, like the Industrial Development Corporation. And then also reassessing how have public-private models and partnerships, how they performed previously, and to what extent was government taking major risks and the private sector not as much good in terms of large-scale projects. So I think when we look at the funding and the combination of funding opportunities for the PRCC, it's also about reassessing how you answer some of that to the private sector, which tends to be risk-averse, and you know, look at the downstream benefits for all role players in the economy. Chair, I think it's also, in having talked about funding, important to point out that the PRCC does not fund projects. Okay, so it doesn't require a conduit of where you have the pot of money and then allocate money to different projects. Rather, its role is to monitor the implementation, integration, and coordination of large-scale infrastructure projects. The way that the projects are funded is that each department that is involved identifies projects within its usual five-year project cycle, applies to National Treasury for a budget, and the National Treasury will allocate based on what it has. Having said this, however, if there are issues of a scale and of public importance that would have such an impact on our country, the PRDC would actually support sponsors in their application to National Treasury for perhaps further funding, or also assist the department to look at those creative combinations of funding. So looking at the issue of public-private partnerships and so forth, how can we improve those funding mechanisms? Here in the introduction of this presentation, I talked about the issue of spatial mapping, and part of the PRCC's work out there was to really understand what were the key needs, the gaps and opportunities when it comes to issues of infrastructure. We needed to understand what the basic needs were in terms of our population, look at areas where also service delivery issues were seriously constrained, where are the economic opportunities currently, to be able to understand what the state of talent infrastructure is, and then correspondingly what will require in future, and then how all of that would unlock economic opportunities. So a mapping exercise was undertaken at national, provincial, and local level to try to graphically capture those issues as they were being understood. In terms of the overview of the agency project, and my colleague will go into more detail around them, we've categorized them into three categories. The first being catalytic, the second looking at enabling socio-economic development, and third around cross-cutting issues. And I think it's really about understanding that infrastructure investment and projects, in terms of its catalytic ability, needs to set up a virtuous cycle in terms of economic growth and development that is sustainable. If you look at the catalytic project, it has a lot to do with the mineral belt around transport corridors, for trade, we have the Durban State container development corridor, which needs to be completed so that there's better access to ports and trade opportunities. The Northern Mineral Belt around resource-rich areas, linking Saldanha and the Northern Cape. So those kinds of things unlock virtuous cycles of economic development and growth on an ongoing basis. We look at the category of socio-economic development, and this is about development that also has social aspect benefits to it. Green power, the green economy, more sustainable energy sources, those types of projects also fall under here. Water and sanitation, preserving our resources, those things fall under the socio-economic development. And then there's projects of a cross-cutting nature, looking at ICT projects, for example. The SKA project or SIP would be one of those. Health and hospital would be another. The national school would be another. And they have cross-cutting benefits, not just social, not just economic, but also around advancing generations of our citizens. This map is one of the maps that was generated by the mapping exercise, and what it illustrates is access to services, relative to population density and economic centers, And what he does show is where our current population densities are located, and it's very much around looking at the current urban centers. We're looking at also issue of the trend of urbanization. It's not unique to South Africa. It's an international phenomenon around people moving from rural urban areas to access opportunities on a greater scale, and the population migration inadvertently causes increased pressure on train services and service delivery in urban areas. And one of the things in terms of looking at infrastructure development is around how do you actually decentralize and balance economic opportunities, given that there's an active inclination to agglomerate at the urban centers. So that's the first map. It's also looking at, if you look at this, it illustrates the provincial growth value add, and it's a provincial breakdown across the country of the value add to our country's economy for 2010 and then forecasting for 2020. And as we can see there, economic development is expected even in 2020 to continue on the current major cities. And those things are important to understand when you're planning 20-year pipeline of projects. So we don't want to take major infrastructure projects in areas that we may not have a large proportion of our country. You know, putting a road to a small place may not make sense when a huge number of people are going to be in the town and the emerging town. And I think this is something around rail, and it's particularly important also around the aspect of tourism, because it opens up opportunities around tourist destinations. This map basically illustrates the extent of future rail requirements for South Africa's economic development. And as we can see, we need to have both heavy haul lines, we need to have industrial lines, and lines that connect to static so there's greater trade and investment. We need to connect the south with the industrial north, as well as looking to east to west connection across our country. And these may be opportunities to, like I said, for when we look at the tips on transport, around how the tourism opportunities can be unlocked, or where there are currently prioritized tourism budgets, how they can harness these things. The next map looks at the illustrates the current versus future location of power generation for South Africa. And it's this depiction assumes that our existing coal generation will be replaced with further coal generation. So we're not looking at a whole range of we're both looking at a new range of green energy. So you can see that there's increasingly solar energy going to be used or planned, wind energy, as well as our nuclear energy in the south of the country. The next map basically illustrates the impact on our national road system. And if you look at the map, it basically shows you that there are, in terms of the segment life of the road network, there are roads that are marked in red that have a 0 to 5 years pavement life, and those that have 5 to 10 years, and the green ones have 10 and more years. And basically what this is saying is that when we look at the impact on the road network, we have to consider new infrastructure development that will take into consideration those routes that have 5 to 10 years or less of road life left, in addition to looking at the strategic value in nature when we roll out development. The next map basically illustrates as integrated news narratives for the future. Around bulk infrastructure, looking at electricity, water, transport,
switch off your cell phone, please. Okay, let us go on. Let us switch off our cell phone. Or allow somebody next to you to switch it off. Who is more... yeah. More technically savvy, yes. Okay, you can continue.
Okay, we seem to be having technical issues this morning. Here, this map looks at integrating the various needs that have been uncovered in terms of bulk infrastructure requirements. If you look at the areas that are shaded in red, those areas actually have very limited services in terms of water, electricity, and we should start looking at how those issues are brought into planning. We can see the major population density is still around the city. And mining areas and in where the future power generation is going to be located. See, that map is quite illustrative of the issue of urban sprawl and the need for densification so that we can efficiently and effectively utilize our bulk infrastructure. Very often what happens in terms of population densities and the issue around where settlements are located is that because the price of land increases the closer you come to cities, often what happens at the level of local municipalities is when you're looking at new settlement development, those constraints might force you to put settlements more on the periphery. It can sometimes be a costing issue. But what happens is that it's actually sprawled. It doesn't make efficient use, it becomes more expensive to take out piping, water, electricity to the periphery of the city rather than looking at the issue of densifying existing settlements so that you make efficient use of the limited resources that South Africa has. Now in Gauteng, if you look there, our footprint is comparable to Jakarta, which has almost double the city's population. But in terms of its footprint, it kind of has fewer people, but the city, because it has been compacted, runs a lot more efficiently. So there's a case to be made around when we look at infrastructure development as well as its implementation, there may not always be a need to sprawl cities. If we look at compaction, if we look at densification, there are other ways of using infrastructure investment around new settlement needs. I think those are also important in terms of cost effectiveness. And the next slide here also is that continuing that issue of fragmentation around urban efficiency, around the effectiveness and efficacy of utility provision for sustained growth. The more cities sprawl, the more dense it becomes, the more expensive it gets for government to use and the services. And when we have such a large area, and remember the previous map where all those red spots were, around where there's a lack of service, or poor services, we need to keep those in mind when we plan our settlements and our infrastructure so that we make more efficient, effective use of our infrastructure capacity. I think this is the other issue around why the PITC is so important, and in my introductory comments I said it is one of the vehicles for new housing development, but not economic development. It provides an opportunity to look at the issue of spatial and apartheid spatial planning in ways that redress the past issues around inequalities. And if we look at the cities in relation to each other, if we look at the issue of settlements in relation to each other, those types of, we call it more spatial justice issues, can be addressed more effectively. And I think that's the last slide here making that point that as the steps were selected, it's also to address the spatial imbalances of the public. It's not just around only large-scale economic infrastructure. is a number of other critical imperatives that the PICC have in place to make that overall social and economic change to our community. So you can see here, again, the population densities, where there's limited services at the moment, where future power generation sources have been earmarked, and also the issue of resources and bulk resources that the PICC has mapped. Okay, I'm going to stop here with the presentation of the map, and Pumela is expected to, Honorable Minister, more in-depth into the SIP and what each of the SIPs is busy with in terms of infrastructure. I think in her presentation, we will also start identifying opportunities where the SIPs can be used and the work of the SIPs as a catalyst for tourism projects, or you may also already, as a department, have identified prioritized projects which actually synergize with where some of the SIP work is happening. Like I'm saying, you have to be discriminating around it. If you have a tourism project in the north where manganese can be, it may not be about a local opportunity, but if it's something like a dam and there's synergy there, then those may be the opportunities here that you talked about in the introduction. So I thank you, and I'm going to hand over to Amanda.
No, thank you very much. The more the opportunities, the more capacity to pay the loans. So we've got to pay our pitch as tourism is right.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. Chair, in the opening remarks, you talked about how you want to optimise growth and rural development. And essentially, that is the essence of this Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission and the project that falls today under. When we talk about catalytic, that's exactly what we're referring to as when we talk about the catalytic project, it's a project that are looking at fast-tracking growth and development. So how the project has been worked out is that there are about 150 individual infrastructure projects. However, they will be grouped and narrowed down to about what you call the 18 strategic integrated projects. And further, the grouping goes further and groups them according to geographic, spatial, energy, social infrastructure, knowledge, regional integration, and water and sanitation. Honorable members, you will notice that there's a flow in terms of how this grouping has been done based on the mapping exercise that Kailash referred to. Because the mapping exercise shows, for example, what are the spatial imbalances. And then as a result, we then have spatial fit. And then they look at what are the energy, efficiencies and deficiencies within the South African economy. And then the projects are seeking to address that. And I could go on. There is also the notion of regional integration, which says that South Africa must also work with other countries, particularly the budget, and then going further up. However, I'm also going to explain how that will come about. And to also, Chair and Honourable Members, highlight that the work of these projects is really about, if we use economic terms, the providing the supply side of infrastructure. And as my colleague Kailash has indicated, that as the foundation is laid, as an enabling environment is laid, it is then it will then be necessary for example tourism to say, from what has been laid, from what is existing, this is where we think that we can optimize what is already existing in order to make sure that we grow the tourism sector. We welcome the initiative to be able to say, even though these are infrastructure projects, how is it that we can then turn them into services, for example, or how can we cater for the services economy, which tourism is part of. So what we then need to show is how we can work together, and then we also need to then highlight what are the things that you would need to make your projects work within this context. Now, Patsy was explaining the first broad category is the geographic SIP. SIP 1, which is a strategic integrated project, one, the one that looks at unlocking the northern mineral belt with water as a catalyst. For example, we know that there are already mineral resources within the waterbed. But as we're talking about the catalytic effect of the strategic integrated project, we then look at saying these mineral resources, how can we then enhance them? As a result, the waterbed region is going to be the first major post-apartheid new urban center, and there will be a focus on green development in that area. Then under that project, we also have, which is under SIPA, we also have a logistics corridor connecting Mpumalanga and Gauteng. Again, based on the special mapping, say nothing connects the two economies. And this is now looking at the country as the 9 provinces, however, with an emphasis on the lagging region, so that we can close the gap. In under SIP 2, that is the Durban Free State Gauteng logistics and industrial corridor. That is looking at, firstly, improving the access to the Durban port and import facilities, and then integrating the Free State industrial strategy activities onto the corridor. I remember in attending the first launches of this work, the emphasis was that no longer will provinces work in silos. There is nothing wrong in provinces working together to be able to achieve some of these objectives. And as a result, for example, I remember one that I attended in Northwest, you had members coming from KZN because there were some projects which were linking to other provinces. So we've seen that collaboration in this work. The area around Oual Tambo International Airport will be developed into an aerotropolis. And we're already seeing those initiatives which are taking place if you drive around I-21 in Johannesburg. There will be logistics, there will be new companies being formed, is also residential areas, it's becoming a city. Now in terms of SIP 3, which is still a geographic SIP in terms of its category, Caleb mentioned the N12 Coast Highway, which improves access into KwaZulu-Natal and national supply chain. So that is a development which, if we look at the nature of the tourism department, could actually make use of that, to enhance the objectives of the department. There are also other initiatives, for example, the new DMH Mzimbubu, and also a talk of a refinery in Kuka. In addition to that, you will have seen in terms of the special mapping where there are rail plans, there are plans to build railroads. One of these is this rail capacity, which is going to go from the Northern Cape to Port Elizabeth. So it is also part of that geographic SIP. So, and then SIP 4, it is also still, the way we've started the presentation here is so that we do the group together. So you'll find that we have the geographic SIP, the energy SIP group together. And then the SIP 4 is about unlocking the economic opportunities in Northwest Province. SIP 4 is the only SIP which focuses entirely on your province. The other SIPs are about development a bit in one province, interlinking with another. However, SIP 4 is the one SIP that is dedicated to the development of Northwest Province as a whole, because, as mentioned earlier, there's an emphasis on lagging regions. So it's about upscaling South Africa in terms of its development so that we don't have these spatial imbalances. And SIP 5 is the South Ghana Northern Cape Developmental Corridor. And it's all about integrating rail and port expansion and expansion of iron ore mining production and beneficiation. What we find in this is that a lot of stakeholders are involved in the work. For example, Transnet is actually involved in that Northern Cape rail, the rail from Northern Cape to Port Elizabeth, and some of these expansion of strengthening maritime support capacity in the South Ghana Northern Cape Development Corridor. So, as Kenneth has mentioned, that PICC is also about, government, state-owned enterprises working together, and provinces, municipalities. It's a real integrated approach. And then we go on to the energy sector. In terms of energy, we're talking about green economy. The chief edge is about green energy in support of the South African economy. And it's really about coming with a diverse range of energy options that the country can use to meet its energy needs. And in this 9 is the electricity generation to support socio-economic development. That's where you see the development, for example, in Medupi, Kusile, Ingula. 10 is the electricity transmission and distribution for all. It's really about making sure that the grid is expanded. It's about the expansion and transmission of the distribution network in order to address those historical imbalances. And Che, you mentioned that we need to contextualize everything around the fact that we are struggling. We want to make sure that we create a better quality of life for all South Africans. So these are some of the things that are addressing that. In terms of spatial sets, these are sets that are looking at addressing the spatial imbalances. We have CIPIC, which is Integrated Municipal Infrastructure Project. It's about developing capacity to access 23 lived resource districts across the country. And this is also one of the sets that are really aiming at making sure that we improve service delivery within the country. And then 6-7 is the Integrated Urban Space and Public Transport Program. The diagram on the left is the one that Hilal shared earlier on, but it's about focusing on the 12 largest urban centers, including all the metros in South Africa. And then 6-11 is the Agri-Logistics and Rural Infrastructure. Now, Chair, you talked about how we should identify what infrastructure project that tourism could feature in. Now, when we look at 6-11, we'd like to highlight that as one of the things that tourism could be featured in the sense that there's a mention of rural tourism infrastructure as part of 6-11. And also, you know, the opportunities for production and opportunities for employment within that system. So we would like to just, call it that is a SIP that can cater for tourism with the emphasis of promotion of rural development, even if it is tourism. Now we then put that chair. Let us expand on this 6-11 since it is relevant to tourism and talk about and highlight that the rural tourism infrastructure is already mentioned in 6-11. What would then be necessary is for the tourism department in their reporting to feed information into the so that it could also be reported under this. And I would also like to, make the chair and the honorable members aware that there is a new SIP coordinator that has just been appointed for the SIP. So it's also, you're calling us at an opportune time to make this presentation because this SIP coordinator was appointed about a week or 2 ago, and it is the National Agricultural Marketing Council. It will be the one that then coordinates the activities of 6-11 in which tourism would fall under. Again, even though we have mentioned 6-11 as one possible SIP that could be linked, what normally happens with all the other SIPs is that there could be linkages with different other SIPs. For example, 6-11 itself has linkages with other SIPs. What is necessary is the exercise of looking at all the SIPs and identifying the opportunities for the specific sector that one would be looking at. Again, part of the components of 6-11 is that rural tourism infrastructure has. We have, even in our presentation, highlighted it so that it stands out. The other set of six is the social infrastructure set. These are the ones that are looking into the social economy, addressing the needs of the social economy. 6-12 being the revitalization of public hospitals and other health facilities. It is really about preparing the public health system so that it can be ready for the proposed national health insurance, which is the NHI. And then we have 613, which is the National School Build Program. This is the one that is, again, speaking to the quality of life that we are leading the chair, which is about, you know, stopping the overcrowding in schools, making sure that schools, whether they're in rural or urban areas, they've got the necessary infrastructure. It's about building computer labs, building new buildings that will assure better quality of education amongst our people. And SEED 14 is the higher education infrastructure. That one is looking at, you know, improving student accommodation. We've seen how when students are trying to find, to register and find accommodation, that it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So that is specifically targeted at the higher education so that we don't have such occurring again in the future. And also making sure that, you know, there's a development of university towns which are linked to recreation, to retail, to transport, and it also speaks to the two new universities which are going to be built in the Northern Cape and Mpumalanga. The knowledge shifts address the issue of the knowledge economy, which most of the time involves the use of information communications technology. Hence, SIP 15 is about expanding access to communications technology. This is the work of the various the department, for example, of communications and the work that they are doing in broadband. Happy to highlight here that for all of these things, there is usually a government department that is spearheading the work, and then it works with other stakeholders within and outside government. So, for example, the issue of broadband would be covered by Department of Communication, as indicated. And then 16 would be driven, for example, by science and technology, and is the one that relates to the SKA and MEARCAT. And these are all important because that one is about increasing the research capacity and making sure that we have high-speed ICT capacity within the country. And then moving on to the rest of the content, it has been identified that there is a need for there to be mutually beneficial infrastructure projects between South Africa and our neighboring countries. But in this particular case, there is an inclination in partnering those countries whose GDP growth is anything between 3% and 10%, so that we could fast track in terms of the progress in the integration. Initially, there were 17 steps. Then another one was added, which was the water and sanitation SIP, which is really about, it's a 10-year plan that is aimed at addressing the backlog of adequate water supply to households. It was about making sure that households have that basic sanitation, basic water, basic social services. We see that all this work can only be possible if there's an enabling environment within which this work is being done. For example, we're talking about, you know, the construction environment. We need to address the supply and competition bottlenecks in components that we need for us to be able to build this infrastructure. You know, the supply and demand of steel, cement, wood, all the components that are needed. We need to address these issues to make and also ensure that the minerals that we find, for example, in the waterbed region are beneficiated in the country. And then, for example, for the transport sector, we need to reduce port charges because there's going to be a lot of activity and also bringing products, goods into the country. We need to acquire modernized rolling stock, which is locomotive and wagon, to meet the expanding demand. We're talking about rural access, again, linked to the catalytic effect of expanding growth and expanding development. So things, you know, institutions like the post office can be used in order to be able to reach out in rural areas. Pharmaceutical manufacturing plant, South Africa is supporting the development of manufacturing facility to produce active pharmaceutical ingredients for antiretrovirals, and it's one of, you know, the first in the world. we again promote our social economy by making sure that we need to have, you know, access and availability of water. So the issue of water licenses, the refining water system, needs to be addressed. Authorization becomes a major issue when it comes to developing this work. If it takes a long time to authorize, for example, a permit for building a certain infrastructure in an area, it can delay progress. So we're looking, part of also the work of the PICC is to identify the bottlenecks and identify the individuals or institutions that are needed to be able to fast track the progress and hold those individuals or institutions accountable. The next slide shows an example of how if a project takes longer to go through the necessary authorization process, how it can delay a project. For example, there was a project where just the environmental impact assessment took about six years. So these are some of the bottlenecks that we think we need to address through the PICC work so that there can be progress. Some projects are meant to be done within a period of 7 years, even though the PICC is projecting into a 20-year period, but there's a lot of pressure to ensure that a lot is achieved in the next 7 years. And so it's about improving the performance of infrastructure projects, where in the past we used to have poor planning at institutional level, now we have a program that coordinates the improvement and the planning and aligning the national, the provincial, and the local structures and ensuring that, you know, there is no poor quality of execution, because sometimes there can be great plans, but then when it comes to execution, that becomes poor. So the President Infrastructure Coordination Commission is also looking at the implementation. Hence, Taylor was talking about dashboards. These dashboards are compiled monthly to track the progress in terms of implementation. And also, for example, avoiding things like the tender abuses, corruption, and also slow or non-payment of contractors. So this is a fully fledged, I can call it wholesome government initiative that says everything that the government has promised must be effective. Is it growth? Is it development? Is it payment of suppliers within 30 days? So for each project, every government promise is being tracked and being monitored. We know the challenge of unemployment and poverty and inequality within the country. So as central to the projects that are being emphasized here is again answering your question, Chair, of job creation. So central to this is the plan is about driving job creation and industrialization, making sure that there are also key areas for youth inclusion, since we know that there's a high level of youth unemployment, and so that the young people can be trainees, they can be apprentices, as this infrastructure is being developed across the country. There is also the notion of skills. Through the infrastructure project, there is a need to make sure that the shortage of professionals in terms of engineering and you know, limited skills is also covered through this work, whereby there is going to be training and development in most of the skills which are needed. And work has already begun, for example, in terms of giving young people opportunities to study for engineering, which is also linked to the work of the Accord that the Economic Development Department is driving. So there are great opportunities that can be harnessed from this work, and as I've mentioned, that is about training artisans, making sure that they are graduate mentoring programs. The PICC has drawn lessons from initiatives that have worked in the country. For example, the 2010 World Cup project, where there was a central coordination with a direct presidential oversight at the top, and then a local organizing committee, ministerial oversight, and all these had the authority to make quick decisions. And then there was a well-defined project, a project specifications and scope and so that is the methodology that is being followed and that if there's a problem in meeting deadline, that must be a channel for escalating those challenges. In terms of implementation arrangements, this is really re-emphasizing what my colleague Taylor has indicated in her introduction, because it's about monitoring actual construction of the work across the country. It's about different funding frameworks that can be tailored to meet the needs of each infrastructure project, because what we find is that not one size fits all. Each project has a different model that it utilizes, but what we also do is to bring all these and draw lessons from them. And it's about having, you know, a single platform and a single planning tool across all the projects in the country. I think, I should not labor into this, but it's just an example of saying that we have a construction stage that is focused on reporting the actual, what we look for is the actual, and that is the work that the technical task team focuses on. It's not projections, it's about what has really happened. If you've got evidence, you need to provide the evidence. And then recommendations are also made under each step after careful analysis. So in conclusion, Chair, it's really about making sure that the country is all talking on the same page, that the vision is shared amongst all in the country, and it's about promoting reindustrialization through manufacturing of input components and machinery. It's about promoting skills development, and it's about greening the economy and finally empowerment. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable.
Thank you, and thank you very much for quite a comprehensive presentation. Now, what I do not know is whether the tea is out and ready or not. If it is ready, perhaps we can break. If it is not, then we can just go for questions. Tea is ready. Let us go for tea for about 10 minutes. And then continue asking questions. Otherwise, we are going to break.
The security of the time is more than
yazi ukuthi ufanele ukuthi lento le the time uyenza ukuplanela ngeme nje
That lady that spoke with the other evening, that about the woman spoke, who is she? We were talking to a lady on the woman's call. She was sitting next to me, and I was sitting next to you. And I spoke about the fact I was discussing the role of women of parliament in over there. Remember that lady? But the one I what I want to know, she's the president. When you get your constituents to inform you, attend up to them, to all the institutions.
I'm waiting with it. Yeah, and I'm not going to.
one minute more, then we shall have to start. Yeah, in fact, what will be having is just a short meeting, a short response from the Department of Tourism for about 5 to 10 minutes, and then you'll be the first. No, it will just be a short presentation. Fine. Thank you very much, Ms. Bana and Ms. Palena, for your very comprehensive and good presentation. And now we are going to let the Department of Tourism to make a short input so that we have the full picture before we interact. Thanks, but no more than 5 minutes, otherwise I shall cut you and I won't be kind.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I do take consideration of the time constraints. Just to get into it immediately, we have been at the department having interactions with the Department of Economic Development who houses the department, and this engagement was primarily to see where does tourism start fitting, appreciating that the PICC main role is focused on infrastructure and tourism, seems to cut across almost all of the cities. And so we met with them, and there was a presentation that was made to MIPTEC to the DG as well as the provincial HODs. And from that meeting, a decision was then made that we need to look into each one of the cities to see in which one can tourism be integrated, but also to look at are there major tourism-specific infrastructure that needs to be looked at, which do not fit in, but would need to be taken into consideration, especially when you're looking at a long-term planning timeline, such as the DICC. And just to give you briefly, when you're looking at the DICC, in terms of where the current discussions are, that looks at unlocking the mineral belt with a water bag as a catalyst. The water bag is one of the key destinations for the Limpopo province, and we also take note of the major infrastructure programs that are taking place there. So you will remember that one of the off-tourism key things is domestic tourism, and we see in the development of a new town a new market for domestic tourism, which then says the facilities around that we have in that area, we need to look at upgrading of those facilities. We need to look at how we make an investment, be it from an EPWP perspective or be it using the tourism support program. But it means we need to channel some of our resources to that area for the development to support the growing market. When you look at the Dead End Free State on the eastern side is where our strong tourism destination lies. And the only thing where we have seen a gap is that one of the roads that are critical to the business is not included in the road infrastructure. And so that one has been noted, which will our DG will then take you forward to the Secretariat for consideration. Then looking at your C3, which is the southeastern node and corridor development, in there there's the development of the Umzimbubu irrigation system and the N2 Wild Coast. The N2 Wild Coast is one of the areas that has been identified for its tourism development. The option is that with the new development, it redirects the road, which means where the current products lie, there are going to be economic issues that we need to look at and start preparing, because we've got a long-term timeline which allows us to start engaging our products, how do we start also moving along and being part of the long-term plan without people waking up one day and being surprised that this development is happening, but they start being aware and plan accordingly. On the Umzimbulu Dam, one of the things that we have learned from our engagement is that Department of Water Affairs, as part of their plans, whenever they develop a dam, a certain percentage of it has to be set aside for recreation. And they even are provided funding for that. And so where we are is that we need to be involved in that, because that recreation and development would involve lodges, camping sites, and the like, which will then be, which will then include into the domestic tourism development plan that we currently are promoting. With the Northwest, SIP4, out of all the SIPs, actually, SIP4, which is for the Northwest, is the one with the strongest tourism aspect, where all infrastructure, your road, your rail, as well as the airlift is being looked into for upgrading. As we know, you've got your big aspect areas, you've got your transit, and with the upgrade of the road and the rail, it means we will be able to increase traffic back into the Northwest. Also, one of the things that pleased us was that the road to Madikwe is actually one of the roads that have been earmarked for upgrade, which has been a problem and has reduced substantially the number of international travelers that go to that area. There's also quite a number, but generally, like I said, a lot of them, when you look at statistics on the integrated municipal infrastructure, they've identified the 23 least resource districts, which is the same district that we've identified as part of our rural tourism development strategy. And so what this starts to do, it says we will not have white elephants when it comes to our projects, because there will be development in those municipalities which will then support the tourism products that are then built. What we need to do is to have a timeline as to which ones of those municipalities are going to be a priority, so that our projects are prioritized aligned to that as well. Then we also on higher education, ATP colleges are included in there. Our focus, again, there will be on those that are offering hospitality, to see them upgraded and provided with facilities so that we are then able to provide workforce for the growing industry when it comes to tourism and hospitality. There was also one major one, the SKA and Aircut. That's one of the major ones that we've identified today. It has huge tourism potential. And even at the moment, there's quite a number of people that are going to the Northern Cape in order to see where the SK is going to be, but also for stargazing. And so we are looking at that to say, alongside the development which we can leverage, we need to develop infrastructure for tourism, so that tourists, be they academic tourists or just people who just want to be part of the stargazing community and appreciate what all of this is about, they will be able to find accommodation, there will be data experiences, attractions alongside it. So there will be, in the next 5 to 10 years, there will be major tourism infrastructure that will be focused to supporting your AKA and Meerkat projects. I think my 5 minutes have run out, but just to give the honourable members a sense of that there is work that is being done that is being focused on ensuring alignment and integration with what is happening from the PICC. There are projects that have been identified. We are in the process of prioritizing, because we can't have all of the projects. From the PICC, I'm sure they have over 600 projects in the infrastructure book, and they're not all covered in the SIS. And so with others, we are developing a tourism infrastructure book, and from there we will then prioritize which one for integration into the SIS we are going to focus on, because those will then yield us the quickest results, given that there is already work being done by our departments in those areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, I think we better be quick, because this infrastructure is going to increase expenditure quite a lot. And then as expenditure increases, we've got to develop a plan of generating revenue. Otherwise, we may find ourselves having a bit of a problem. As we build, definitely we've got to build revenue-generating infrastructure. So that we will be in a position to pay our debt. And I hope that we are going to have more toll roads, because otherwise we are not going to be able to pay this.
Yes.
Yes. Good to have more toll roads. Okay. Now then, over to you, Mr. Farouk.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I apologize for the rush. I have a meeting and I didn't want to feel that you had to, you know, put over something that you haven't dealt with thoroughly. But from the two presenters, I'd just like to thank them very much. It's clear that they have insight into where we're going to in the country in terms of the National Development Plan, and they do it with passion. So I must thank you. I think it's important that we are meeting today to discuss these particular things. I've got a few queries more than questions. The first one really relates to page 6, where we talk about coal generation to coal generation. And I wonder whether, you know, if we not being a little bit hypocritical in a sense, it's saying on the one hand we're supporting the green economy, and, you know, and we should be actually seeing ourselves going using less coal-fired type, you know, energy supporters, as opposed to more. And that sort of sentence is, that sort of rang bells with me and when I saw going from coal generation to coal generation. In fact, we're going into the status quo, if not increasing the problem with climate change and all the carbon impact that it has on our country. So maybe some, just some clarity on that. In the road network mapping or spatial map on page 7, there's a statement there to the effect that all the green areas, which happens to be the area I come from, the Eastern Cape, needs some sort of, is more than 10 years old or less. It doesn't make sense. It says all pigments that are not green have a life less than 10. So in other words, 90% of the country, including the Eastern Cape, as I see that map there, has now got a lifespan of less than 10 years. And in fact, I would put the lifespan of the green areas, Mr. Ingram next to me, and Mrs. Norby on the other side of me, who all come from the Eastern Cape, live there, no better, because effectively the roads are in a shocking state. I would think it's the other way around. And maybe the other part of the country has got better roads than the Eastern Cape, but certainly that thing is conflicting, and I just don't quite understand, you know, the situation there. The next question is really relating to the National Agricultural Marketing Council's role on the task team as an agricultural body, which I know, and how their role or their expertise would play any meaningful contribution towards the technical task team. I think our lady from tourism should be there rather than MPAC or one of those agencies, because they're clearly an agricultural marketing body. And I can understand how that could assist in the tourism issue, but to indicate that has been our sort of our closest ally or maybe member that could actually look up for the interests of tourism is a misnomer of the first order. And I think that one should clearly try and define more of a tourist body to look at tourist interests within the infrastructure as opposed to an agricultural body, even though they are rural in nature. Then the last question, which really is an overarching one, and I'd like to get some sort of answer. You know, we're all aware of bureaucracies in terms of government departments and treading on toes and everything like that. Now we have a management team and a technical task team, which meets quarterly, which in effect, I hope, has some sort of overarching authority over the implementation of various departments of this plan. And I'm just wondering to what extent you have authority in terms of being able to certainly dictate this program to municipalities who turn around and say, hey, anyway, you know, I'm serious about this, and I think it's important how one does get you empowered to be able to do what you want to do in a manner that's not going to create these bottlenecks and these bureaucracies where you're hitting stone walls and people say, don't come and tell me how to do something, I know better. And really, it is really such an important coordination process that is necessary here to ensure that we get all the same results. That, you know, if you can tell me what authority that you will have or what power or teeth you will have in this process, that maybe it's something that legislators really need to look at to ensure that you get that power, because without it, you're going to be running up against the brick wall. Thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate the presentation. It enlightened me tremendously in terms of some of the specific, you know, having read the report, but here we go into the the differences. It's really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also very pleased to be a part of this meeting. I'm certainly enlightened myself. The lady from the department, I'll get the name. She actually preempted a lot of our questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she did. Anyway, what I would like to ask is if you see on page 5 of the document dealing with the subject which is rightfully identified as a huge challenge, which is increased urbanization. I speak about rural to urban migration, right? And I think the mitigating action for that is suggested on page 12, sub 11. Because obviously, in order to reduce this bottleneck, this huge rural to urban migration, you've got to create activity and facilities and infrastructure in the rural areas, keep people more closer to their homes and towns instead of becoming a burden on the social services in the urban centers. SIP 11, in order to achieve that, speaks about investment in agriculture, rural infrastructure, the support expansion of production. I mean, talks about small scale farming as one of those. It talks about facilities for storage, such as silos, fresh produce, etc. And then it also talks about processing facilities. And yes, it does say it talks about rural tourism infrastructure. Now, I was just wondering whether the department has, as you said, going to be coming up with this with own books, right? And then you're going to be sharing that book with them. Have you identified already these tourism infrastructure projects in the rural area? But more than that, none of these mitigating actions include any manufacturing sector. You get what I'm saying? There's no manufacturing sector. There's processing, in a way to create jobs that absorb labor. Small-scale farming doesn't really create the kind of jobs that one. So people are, not, a younger generation who got to high school is not going to stay back at home to do farming. You know what I'm saying? They're still going to go to the urban centers because that's where the money is. That's where the jobs are. So I don't see anything talking about SMEs being, part of this whole thing in a rural setting, which is an ideal thing to actually stem the flow of people from the rural to the urban. So is there any such thing, SMEs as part of SIP 11 somewhere? And then the other one is concerned with my colleague raised, but I just want to expand on that a little bit. Well, what's the target setting like? What's the rollout program like? And what are the time frames? Are they like strict time frames there? Is this going to be a staggered rollout? How is it actually going to be panning out? That's the point. Having it on paper is one thing, but then implementing and realizing, actualizing it is quite another. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the PICC delegation for the presentation. I think Honorable Trump, I also feel that the department kind of touched on some of the areas that I would have wanted to ask, but I will just keep on PCCP for emphasis. But I want to start with the emphasis that was placed on SLIP 11, rural development and therefore rural tourism. Because I wanted to say, tourism cuts across all areas. At that time, I was thinking of rural water, sanitation, human settlements, health facilities, whichever. You will find that actually tourism comes in there. We need roads for the tourists to move freely and safely and comfortably in our countries. Water, sanitation, and so on and so forth. But I want to say on rail, it seems as if the emphasis of this infrastructure process, the emphasis is the rail that carries goods. Yeah, it seems as if that's where the emphasis is. But us in tourism, we are also interested in railway lines which can be used by the tourists to move around the country, see the country, visit areas of interest in a very comfortable and cool way. You know how
beautifully and be traveled by train, provided of course the standards in that train are there. So I think this is the area that we are also worried about. I mean, look at this, you know, this area is being attended to, and yet it does contribute to tourism quite a lot. Now, the other thing which I am not quite sure about is this coordination. Yes, I can see how you are describing how the PICC is now enabling coordination to take place between and among the provinces and so on and so forth. But I've been trying to think. For instance, we just have the budget of the various departments. And the budget will also have the program for the next 3, 4, 5 years and so forth. And my question would be, what influence did the PICC have, for instance, for those programs? Because to me, it seems as if the departments plans, you know, they made their plans as departments and so on and so forth. There's also the national development plan. But where does all this fit in? You know, PICC, who goes to who? The department must wait for the PICC to have its program, and then the department feeds its own program into the PICC. Or should it be the PICC that looks at the department's priorities, and the PICC therefore fits into the program of the department? You see, I'm a bit confused there. There's structures like MINMEC, for example, plans and programs and talk about interstate schemes. And actually, the point that was raised by Mr. Farrell here, and to how much authority, for instance, do you have to dictate, he mentioned municipalities, and to influence the municipalities and budgets and the programs. I would say the same about departments. How much authority do you have, for instance, to change the program of the tourism department? If the tourism says we've got four programs and this is what we want to do in the next 5 years, so where do you fit in as the ICC? You see, if you could just explain that part to me, I would be very happy. And then also you say you have a 20-year vision. Fine, I don't know how many years planning, 2 years vision. You know, I think experience has taught us now in South Africa that 20 years is a very short time. Starting from 1994 up to now, nearly 20 years. It is a very short time. I don't think it is time for us now to plan for 50 years, you know. Because once the plan has been made, it doesn't matter what party rules South Africa, what political party rules South Africa. I'm looking forward to a time where there will be a program for this country. And whoever comes in, fits into that program. What will differ is the implementation and how they go about it. So for me, 20 years is very short. What does that mean? The ANC will be gone by that time. Yeah, thank you for something. I think those are my... Oh, yeah, skills. On skills. We are also interested. You know, let's talk about skills. The tendency is for people who come to present to us, they talk very generally about skills development and the higher institutions, higher education. But we would like to know whether really we are saying this is exactly what we are preparing. At certain point in time, we will be having so many engineers. We need so many doctors. By certain point in time, we will be having all these doctors. We need so many of this, we need so many of this. We plan, we are ready to do that. And this is going to happen at the University of Pretoria, in NISA, it's going to happen in WSU, it's going to happen in UCT and so on and so forth. This is what we would like to see now. We've been talking about it a lot, but I think what we want to see carefully is a real practical planning for skills development in this country. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Let us stick to the terms of reference. Mr. Farai.
No, sir, thank you very much. That's our concern. I think this group must take a decision. Normally, the Chinese of staff is the opposition and top 20. sometimes it takes a question. These pages for me are useless now. And
yes,
every,
yes,
every
yes.
time.
Sorry,
okay. So 10% for the third time must go there. The bigger voices of the
round. Oh.
No, the sooner you raise your hand, the sooner I have voice.
Now let me welcome the presentation, two of them. But really, my request, the humble request, this is the presentation of the IPCC. If they cannot, but maybe give it to our secretary, except for to make the phone. Because I have to work with my spectacles, and even there I cannot really see, but if you really can have another result, you must have it so that you can get to it. So many times you need to. My question has been asked, and mine is only to emphasize on this one of the routing from today, which is my project. And really, it has already stopped. The business in terms of tourism, that one is the fact. And I want to maybe the IPCC.
Yes.
Maybe the what measures can assist for that road to really people who have a tourism business there. And to me, as a president of the tourism community, to go outside and see the tourism is dying, it's not going to open anywhere.
Is it R71? R74.
Yes. Every time this asking for knock into my head. Other question, the issue of the implementation to me is very important. I agree on the two papers that are the manual for the two from tourism and IPCC, but how the implementation part of it, because you wanted the results so that you could do and make an oversight as a committee. So important to us. Lastly, you know, when we prepared for 2010 World Cup, there was a smart coordination of everything, all the department and everybody. Where is that smart program now? Because if we can have that particular smart program of coordinating all the work, that's why we suggested this video for St. John, this World Cup, and this World Cup was also in the why now? After 2 years, after 2010, this smart thing just finishes before the milk of the store. If we can have that smart thing again, I'm sure we can go forward if our country. Thank you very much.
Moment of it just reminded me of something that goes like this, but the whole of the ANC gave birth to all of us. And that will never be wished away until eternity is one. So we should be favorable to them, say, you know, the black sheep, most of the time, is always found in every flock. Now, Chairperson, that was on a lighter note. Chairperson, whilst one is appreciating that is the coordination and the working together, I think Manjob has raised this in a very emphatic way, to then say planning, implementation. Secondly, the issue of the budget. Because at the end of the day, we have to understand as to where the budget is coming from, because we have to engage on that as parliamentarians at the end of the day. I was also thinking also the monitoring and evaluation. How does it relate to this particular structure? As much as the honorable member who has just left, so it's questionable the issue of the farming structure being part of. The truth of the matter is that we cannot wish it away, because tourism centers are also around that. I'm thinking, Chairperson, about you go to Port St. John. Port St. John, we had two tea factories. Everybody is always interested to go there, to simply see what is this thing. Most South Africans, they do not know. You go to Zimbabwe, you find it. But in South Africa, very rare. It's another area that must be totally looked into because it's also sinking. I'm talking about those two plantations. One you get into Sigi Sigi, one is important. What is important, John? So I'm saying these are the, I'm talking about farming in particular. It becomes an interest for every one of us. Going back to Port St. John's again, as much is to be done around the issue of the infrastructure, Port St. John's as a key fundamental area for tourism that is now in the Eastern Cape, little has been said about. You may talk about Umzimvubu River getting to the sea in Port St. John's, but you can't do the dam in Port St. John's. It could be somewhere else, further up, next to the mouth. I'm not sure where the river comes from. But I'm then saying, Port St. John's had had, that is the minister into that. I become so passionate about that particular area because Port St. John should have been today in the whole of South Africa, in the whole of South Africa, in Africa in that matter, a center for tourism in the country because it forms part of the wild coast. Now, you may come up with ideas to then say, why are we giving so little? You spoke about the N2 that is going to be developed. Yes, it moves about something like 10 to 20 kilometers away from Port St. John's. That is the town. Well, what is there to be done to see to it that whatever happens there also flows and benefits Port St. John's as a tourist attraction? There's a landing pad. There was a military base in Port St. John's, which had a military base and a landing pad that is there. It's not used. Now, these are the key fundamentals about Port St. John's, if I may bring that into the fore. Now, airlift, you spoke about airlift in Northwest. It's been a worry because we were there just listening and we were told that things are simply going down. Now, the biggest question that comes into my mind is to then say, from 1994, these things were happening and there was some kind of activity and what went down? Probably we're not doing our work by doing local oversight. But I don't believe so. Because now it's as if we're starting all over again. The infrastructure has been there. These things were functional. What went wrong? Now, these are the questions that Chairperson wants you to begin to look into. That further talks, and which now excites me a little, what the minister is doing, Lindy on the other side, and Sulu, the Honorable, and also what the Honorable Minister Jeff Hadele did. To shame those that are messing up. And Lindy on the other side, Sulu, the Honorable, I appreciate also the move that is currently taking, because certain are going to sit here, and you find that things are not happening at the end of the day, only to find that we'll be doing the oversight, only to find that we want to see Ubanza benefit and is that Laganjani. Then you find that Umamunjobe just said, things are not happening. Because look, we're talking about the EIA. Sorry for taking so long. The EIA has been a problem for so long. Then you ask yourself a question, who is this devil in a hole that things must not then begin to happen? You go to the Eastern Cape West, that is I'm talking about the wild coast, because every time and again is about the EIA. And then you ask yourself a question, who is EIA at the end of the day? Because if you get into some provinces, developments are happening within 20 kilometers away from, next to the sea, not 20 kilometers far away from the sea, or kilometers away from the sea, but you find that they're happening. Then you ask, who benefited? Who's talking? Now, these things, they tend to anger us a lot when we begin to look into that, to then say, why are we, you talk about 20 years long job, 20 years is a lot of time, right? If we put our act together, things can happen. But if we're playing this honky-dory and saying, who's going to benefit here, who's going to blah, 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 all that, things are not going to happen. So it then says we have to begin to look into ourselves, to have the right people to begin to drive the program. We can have the structure, but we have the right people to drive the program. That's a big question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love Boston.
Okay. Let us. Are there any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Not question much. But anyway, having said that, the one of the worrying things is implementation. Because one of my questions here is, you know, which of these EICC offices is responsible for identifying the problem that exists? Because time and again, you find that even on television or wherever, there are people who are popping up in places that have just been forgotten, totally forgotten. How does this work? And how does it coordinate its functions with the municipalities? Because they are the people on the ground. You find that one is doing his own thing, going that way, the other one is going at a tangent. How are these all coordinated? And the implementation, who is responsible for the implementation? Because we've got glorious plans and policies here, and everyone seems to be popping up with his or her own, you know, brilliance. But you find that everything is all over and we are not consolidating and we are not implementing. These are the frustrating things. You go on oversight. You find that things are not the same as on paper. Papers are very, very nice, but the implementation itself, there doesn't seem to be anything that is pinning anybody down. And if you don't do this, who is the hangdog who has got to make sure that you are functioning? I don't know whether the people who are supposed to do that, there's a department, what is it, ma'am? Chinese department? You don't feel that there is anything that is happening, and it is frustrating. You go to Qatar today, it's like that place is just a pigsty. You go to Port St. John's, like the Honorable Member had just said, those are the things that are hurting. And where you go to, you find people asking you questions. Why is this thing deteriorating? What is this, you know, what are you people doing? So these are the things that, which I don't know right now, what we are going to do with all this information. Because we've got the information, and we have been bombarded with all kinds of information. But ours is just to listen and ask questions here, and what happens thereafter? Nothing. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, in fact, we are going to put it in the PRR, and it goes to Parliament, and thereafter it is the responsibility of the Speaker, and it's no longer the responsibility of the Committee. Unless he says that the Speaker sends it back to the committee. Mr. Shah, then they'll have to respond.
Yeah, thank you. There are a lot of questions we are asking. We just, the young people are getting perhaps, you know, red already. many of these questions we are asking actually doesn't even maybe directly, they are in position to respond to all of
them. Mr. Shah, ask your question.
The question is, look, all of these SIPs gonna need a hell of a lot of special skills to implement. I'm wondering whether the governance structure, well, you have a governance structure, who is there in this entire process, R&D involved, in terms of analyzing the kind of skills that we require to actually, you know, realize these objectives. Have we done an audit of existing skills and the projected required skills that will be needed to actually put all of these into place? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shah. And then it's time for responses. Ms. Fana, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, members, for questions. All of them are very interesting, and some of them specific to the work of the PIDC. and where it's specific to the PICC, I will respond. And where it is perhaps an intergovernmental responsibility that doesn't, the PICC doesn't directly have linkages to, perhaps those are ones that I can comment on, Member Shah, like pointed out. Some of these things are about the board, all-encompassing delivery strategy of government, not just the PICC. I think starting with Member Farrow's question, unfortunately he has left, talking about coal generation being replaced with future coal generation. I think we also in the country have to be realistic, as much as we embrace the green economy, we all want to move towards cleaner forms of power. It is a graded approach. And until such time that we are capacitated, wind energy, solar energy, we will be reliant for the next while on cogeneration. That's not to say it's hypocritical. It's also starting to look at the graded and phased approach to how we transition between different forms of energy sources. So I think that's just in response to Member Gold's first question. In terms of the road mapping, I mean, according to information that has been sourced, and remember, in terms of doing the mapping exercises, the PICC also relies heavily on our SOEs, and Crossaid one of those, the road agency, and the data that we get is from there. And according to those estimates, the roads indeed have a lifespan of 10 years and more, of 2 years and more. So I think, I mean, although experience might say to us what are the technical requirements of the road being under 5 years pavement life and those that there are technical considerations around how those assessments are reached, which I can't go into now because I'm not an expert on those, I'm afraid. But I think those kinds of things, the information can be obtained from PRASA. But I can assure the committee that in the mapping exercise, the most current data that has been available was utilized. I think in terms of the NCMA, the NCMA is a sub-coordinator. It's not about looking at championing any specific issue. It coordinates the work of an entire SIP. Although it may be agricultural in nature, there's nothing that would preclude its ability to champion other issues. For example, you have SIP 7 related to transport, human settlements in the 12 major cities. Agriculture isn't the SIP coordinator, traffic. So it looks at you know, what are the coordination responsibilities more than the technical know-how that is required for the delivery of the infrastructure project. The technical task team is responsible for supporting the requirements of the integrated project. So as much as the coordinators deliver, it's an integrated delivery mechanism. And I think that's the way Cabinet has also started it, so that the shared responsibility and not just a specific entity or department championing issue-specific issue-specific projects. It needs to be a broader approach than that. I think the next question that was posed by Member Jobe, and I think a lot of the members, including Member Farrow, around the PICC authority, what self does it actually have? I think this is quite interesting, and Pumela can add on this, is that in terms of what is being monitored and coordinated are already, at the moment, current projects, so those that have already been in the pipeline. It seems like, for example, Rehraya in Joburg, integrated rapid bus transport system in Cape Town, the dams that are under construction. So while the new project pipeline is in plan, it's also around looking at what exists at the moment. Members may be aware that there's a new bill being proposed, the National Infrastructure Development Bill. and that will give the issue of integrated and fast-tracked infrastructure a lot more clout. It's been released for public comment, I think, at the end of March, until the end of March, and it's now back as a state law advisor. So there's a number of levels at which you need to look at the influence of the PIDD, not really budgetary in its way. I did mention at the beginning of the presentation that PICC it's not a funding conduit. It doesn't allocate budgets for specific projects. And like my member in the way that she said, departments have already put in their budgets and the five-year cycles for projects that exist, and there are priority projects that have been identified. But where the projects have the impact of have a strategic value to the country as a whole, not just a specific project, and its implications are so vast, the PICC will support other departments or the entities to approach National Treasury for additional budget. And I think there was an example, members, if you allow me to share, of the Free State House Department in the year, I think it was last year, remember, the Department of Health in the Free State, had actually expanded its budget, but before the financial year was over. And it wasn't because of misappropriation or its full expenditure. It was actually because implementation and service delivery had improved. So sometimes if delivery exceeds what we plan it to, your budget gets used up faster. In that case, the department approached the PICC because otherwise, services would come to a halt, especially when things are running well, you want to maintain and improve it. And the PICC assisted the department and supported it in the form of support when it approached National Treasury to ask if there has been any money left or budget left that it could allocate to the department. So in those ways, there is influence. I think there was another one around, another example in terms of higher education and training, where, and I talked about it, where we find that students who come from rural areas, one of the constraints to them studying is about affordable accommodation. So if you don't have accommodation close to where you study, it can be a bit of a limiting factor, a limiting factor that you have any studies. There was a request from the Department of Higher Education and Training for student accommodation. And this is national. It's also taking into account genetic characteristics and indications for the country as a whole that if we do not provide opportunities for PVC disadvantaged and less resourced areas and students coming from there to enable them to study, it has excused the kind of development we have in the country, because what it means is that those grow up in areas that are close to the universities that don't need to go away and look for accommodation automatically have an advantage when it comes to tertiary education, because it's not as prohibitive. So in that case as well, it would have been a crisis if our supply of student accommodation couldn't keep up with demand, because it could limit opportunities available for especially rural students. And in that case, the PIC supported Department of Higher Education and Training's, I think, approach to Treasury for more information, for more budget, even during the five-year cycle. And obviously, Treasury will allocate on what is available. But those are just a few examples of how the PIC does have some clout. In terms of implementation, and I'm just passing across some of the things, Pamela, and Pamela mentioned the construction updates that we provided to cabinet on a quarterly basis. It's set by the PIC technical team, so they're not talking about this plan. And the nature of it is also preempts one of the other questions. Some are multi-year projects, some are single-year projects. For example, building a dam isn't going to happen in one financial year. Maybe building a school is 1 year. So there are different levels at which implementation is set, and then on a monthly basis, the PICC technical task to check actual implementation, and it means different things for different projects. If it's a 1 year school goal project, then you check faster milestones. If it's a dam, you know, you'd have more things like the EIA and all of that. It also, in terms of authority, where the technical task team identifies obstacles to construction, and that's the purpose of the technical task team. It's not only to streamline integration and delivery, it's also about looking at what are the blockages to infrastructure projects. And there are many. I mean, we're coming out of a process where regulatory approval can sometimes delay things unnecessarily. I think there's something like 144 steps in an EIA approval. But some of those don't need to be unnecessarily time-consuming. So where those kind of things do come about, it's escalated to the MANCO. And the nature of the PICC is they are now political champions. I think another thing about success is that if you have a champion and there are clear responsibilities, those things, the chance of success is much higher. So the MANCO looks at unblocking obstacles, and then the MANCO is made up of a ministry, it's made up of a number of key departments that use their influence to try and lessen the time frame around which those projects need to run. Those member fails questions. Member Shah talked about urbanization, urban rural urban migration. And I think one of the things that we need to be cognizant of in a country is that that type of urbanization is not unique to South Africa. It's happening internationally. And people come to urban centers for a variety of reasons. It's not just about jobs, it's about quality of life, it's lifestyle, opportunities. So sometimes even if you put up the very same facilities in a rural area, it's like a New York scenario, you know, people go there for the experience. It's not saying that we shouldn't look at rural development, it's just that urbanization is an international phenomenon. And you know, it's something that we need to plan for instead of mitigate against, you know, if we are more aware of the realities of what a 20-year scenario will look like, we'll be able to respond to the demands that what the country will be faced with. But having said that, rural development remains a priority simply because of the issues of poverty attached to it. And as much as there are no manufacturing activities in the SIP or no FNME, that doesn't mean that there may not be no activities outside the PICC. So, for example, EDD looks at, and Fumela can talk more about this, the issue of FNME generally. Whether it's included in the SIP or not, I think is an issue we can look at, but it doesn't preclude the kinds of activities. The skills plan, and I think that Member Shah talked about it, do we have adequate and sufficient skills of a technical nature which will enable the delivery of an ambitious 20-year pipeline of projects? And the easy answer is yes. And yes, because we at this point are able to harness technical capacity within state-owned enterprises to assist with the rollout of infrastructure projects, but we also need to think longitudinally and downstream. So what are the skills that we envisage, maybe them is going to come online 15 years from now? What are structural skills, what engineering skills, and specifically target higher learning, advancements of higher education and training, to cultivate those skills so that they are available to us. It's not just about current skills, but future growth. And I think those are the kind of things that the youth report looks at, that I think EDD has started looking at with further education and training colleges. I think there's Fort Bay College, where there is a program to look at how students go from what they are studying into either job placements or entrepreneurship opportunities, so that we are prepared for what we need downstream. Matt, do you want to look at member I think I've covered the issue of time frame and targets, Bembisha, and it's very specific to the different projects. Thank you, Chair, and thanks to my colleague. I'm going to ask my colleague to just go to the third slide, which shows the TIGC government structure. And I'm going to assist members by bringing this structure to life through examples so that we understand the governance structure and how it works on the ground through your submissions. For example, if we look on the left-hand side, we have 6-1, which reports into the secretariat and the mentor, ultimately the TICC Council. What we see there, it says intergovernmental forum, and then it says 6-1. In reality, the Minister of Public Works is the one that is the chair of that intergovernmental forum. And then what we then have is the SIP coordinator, being ECOM, whom we see below that. So the SIP coordinator is the one that is responsible for ensuring that everything that is highlighted under SIP 1, which we have shared, is done and that it is reported to the PICC technical task team. What we then find, which also answers some of the questions, is that in each SIP coordination, there has to be a skills development element. Hence, we also then, within that, have the SIP skills coordinator. And most of this work is still at its infancy, and it is progressing as we go along. And then what we have, the blue line, I'm sorry it's not clear, it says various implementation agencies. What the SIP coordinator does is to bring together every stakeholder that is capable of bringing that particular strategic integrated project to its fruition. And if I may make a second example, we have then SIP 2. And under SIP 2, that is the Durban Free State Gauteng Logistics Industrial Corridor, the chairperson of that intergovernmental forum is the Minister of Public Enterprise. And below that, we then have Transnet as the SIP coordinator. And then it goes on in the same way that it does with all the other SIP roles, the skills coordinator, and then we have implementing agencies. And then the SIP 3 example that is made again, it is usually the government department that takes the lead, and then an appointed agency is the one that they coordinate. In the case of SIP 3, which is the Southeastern Northern Corridor Development, we have Minister Mkhinti as the IGF chair, which is Department of Rural Development, being the chair of that. And then we have the SIP coordinator being the coordinating role. I hope that... Because SIP 3 is about Southeastern North and Corridor Development, hence then the appointment of GCTA as the SIP coordinator. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think there's also a question that the member in Joby asked about rail and why there's no passenger rail on the corridors around rail transport. And I think the issue isn't so much about what kind of rail, it's about putting in the rail capacity to connect those various areas. At the moment, that doesn't exist. The rail infrastructure can then be used for other purposes as well. And I think that member agrees about looking at the phased approach. And we must remember that the mandate of the PIDC is about looking at the issue around prospecting infrastructure that will spur economic development in the country. You know, industrialization is one of the ways of increasing our rail capacity is important. I'm just going to the questions member to see what we haven't touched on. I think the MNE issues that Middle Bengu talked about, we've covered around how the dashboards are put together on a quarterly basis and all that goes to cabinet, and cabinet comes back with decisions. And those decisions have to be implemented by the KICC. So they, my council, not cabinet, my council. And the company is chaired by president, so it goes right up to the president for his intervention. We covered member Mohanian's question of who is responsible for implementation, and it's really about the different agencies as well as the coordinator. Chair, I'm not sure if I've missed any questions.
No, I don't think so, according to my list. Does tourism want to say anything? No.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly on two things. There was a question that Mandome asked around, do departments go to KICC or does KICC go to the department?
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, as Department of Tourism, we've taken the view that we will go to PNC, and we have included some of the activities into our current DPT as well, so that as the MTS period goes, the integration, and we start bringing some of the things into our weekends as well. We definitely said we'll wait, but it wasn't going to be in a visa, because work is already happening, and it is only right that we look at leveraging what is already happening and include it in our program. So you can rest assured as the committee that as Department of Tourism, we are doing right by ensuring that we use all government instruments and strategies to ensure that tourism is lifted to its proper level. Then on the issue of agritourism and what was on CP level is put as rural tourism. We understand why it was put there. If you previously when we're under environment, agritourism was with agriculture in there. And there is still that portfolio that we still need to find a way that it comes into the Department of Tourism, because it's a niche. We would deal with it as a niche. And for that, we already have a framework with which we deal with such niches. In a similar way, when the Honourable Member was talking about the tea processing plants that people want to go see, it's similar to your world of beer in Johannesburg, where people go to see how beer is made. And those are the wine tasting and all of that. And so those niches, we deal with them in the department, but we need to bring the agri-tourism aspect of it into the department, and understanding that it would be built on a vibrant agricultural economy in that area. So the agriculture has to happen first before tourism comes. We're just looking at, there was also a question asked, do we have a list of these projects? Provinces have given lists. There's a long list of projects that we have, and we're going through a process of prioritizing which ones can be done within the next 5 to 10 years. You'll recall that we also have our 2020 strategy, and we need to look at what are the priorities in that strategy that can be related to some of these projects as well as we go along. But we have incorporated what is happening from a CICC perspective into the work that we are doing.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me take the this corner and Glenn and Masupia for your input. I think from the input we've got hope. But from my side, I think that by this time next year you should be having a clear financial plan to this. Because if there is no financial planning initially, then we may find ourselves in a situation where we cannot pay some of the obligations. So if perhaps that could go together with financial planning, it would be much better. But I did not see the financial planning side, except saying that this is not funded by PICC, and saying that perhaps we can look at pensions, this and the other, and so forth. So I'm not sure whether the balance sheets of ESCOM and Transnet can be in a position to raise the types of billions that that this demands. I mean, we can the minute you have an idea, you've just got to budget for that step by step by step, and then we should be already having estimates so that they can guide us. Where does the money come from? Because it is not operate like that. Perhaps we may find the country in a situation where it cannot meet its financial obligations, and that will mean our interest rate will go up, and that will mean our businesses will not thrive. It's just as simple as that. And but thank you very much for the information. It has been enlightening, and perhaps we'll meet this time next year, but it will most probably to be a different thing. Looking at this issue. But thank you very much. And then we are encouraged by the Department of Tourism for having taken the initiative as well to make sure that as this infrastructure development plan proceeds, it then starts identifying the possibilities that emerge in as far as tourism is concerned. Thank you, and thank you very much. So the meeting is adjourned. Briefly, the program. Let us discuss the program of the committee.
Two programs before the committee. The first one is the second term program, which is coming to the end next week. If we look on that program now, as of today, we are at number 8, where we have just received the briefing from the CICC. And then next week on Tuesday, it will be the last briefing for the 10 by the National Convention Bureau. That will be our last meeting for this term. And in essence, that would mean service and the committee. This program has been fully implemented as agreed to by the portfolio committee and also approved by Parliament. And then the second copy set is the proposed term program for the committee. We have been given a telethon program by the National Assembly and the NCOP component so that we can do the planning of the committees for the third term of 2018. We are proposing service to the committee that the 22nd to 26th of July, that will be a provincial oversight week. And then we are proposing the first day to the committee. I'm not certain, Mr. Kurai, how safe it is to go to Christians at that time. But we are proposing that on the 2nd of July will be a provincial oversight to the state. Then the second week, the 29th of July to 2nd of August, will be the provincial oversight visit to KwaZulu-Natal. We are proposing also the 6th and 7th of August, we do our planning session as a committee. And then the the 9th of August is a public holiday, it's a women's day. Then on the 12th and 13th of August, there's Parliament has arranged for a sectoral parliament, the women's parliament. That is an institutional program there. We have to highlight it because it's also important in the calendar of the committee, although it's not driven by us as a committee, by the institution itself. Then the 20th August, we are proposing that we will have that outstanding meeting that we have with the, we were supposed to have with the National Land Claims Commission on the unresolved claims, which some of them they impact on our processes as a committee. And also 27 August we'll get a briefing from the Industrial Development Corporation on the funding of projects. And 3rd September we are proposing also to have a second briefing meeting with SALGA. We have looked at all the possible dates that we have at our disposal and also at the program of Parliament. The 9th and 10th of September, that were the two dates that we are proposing to have the summit of Portfolio Committee. The 9th is on a Monday, the 10th is on a Tuesday. Now, we were proposing, if the committee does agree with this proposal, then we will make a motivation that can go to the health service and the chief people so that that Monday we can use the whole day for the summit and then the other day of that Tuesday session. And in communication also, I mean interaction with our stakeholders as well. Then the 17th of September, then we intend also to call the department, our own department, also they can come and FAT to come and talk to us on this long-term strategy of the tourism in Lagos. Then the 26, 25 to 27 is a tourism month activity. There is a proposed program that has been developed by the National Department of Tourism with regard to that. So broadly, that is the proposal suggestion was listed before the committee, and once again, if the committee is in support of it, then we would appreciate it so that we can also start starting other processes like communicating with provinces, communicating with provincial legislators, communicating with the affected premiers of the areas where we are supposed to go. It's always important when we do it earlier than to do it very late. It may appear that it lies far, but practically it's not far. It's something very near. So if we approach provinces late, then they might say, no, we can't accept your visit because it, our programs are less and so on and so on. And unfortunately, they say that there's nothing we can do as a committee. So those are the proposals that we are placing before the committee, for the committee to look at them and see where they want to make changes, if there are other proposals that we can make, and then we can look into those. Now, in terms of the quarterly report, Chair, of the first quarter and the second quarter of 2013, we have agreed that as a support staff, those are the issues that we will start with in our first MSS committee. We will put that as number one on our proposed program that we will be doing for the quarter. Because department and SAT have to report it to the committee quarterly. But because of that understanding that we had with the GC, so they come and report to us biannually. So we'll ask them then in the first quarter in October before we go to DRR and other things so that they can come and report both on finance, on performance, and also on the finance of the DRR for the first and second quarter of this new financial year. Thank you.
Okay, let us make sure that we do plan for the quarterly report, because it is an obligation of the committee to do that type of oversight. Great, but I
on Monday, I'm not sure where we see it, but us, you know, from the AAC, when everybody has to go and do the future work, especially in Western Kibula, we have to claim back our province. Secondly, I look at this one of the 15th of September, more than months. Where can we put where? I think this committee is actually has to say that my people has a big control so that my capital is in our hands. I don't know where can we put it. We can have a debate in the house on tourism. Capital is in the house.
Yeah, I think there we've got to look also either at your Friday and the Saturday that goes well with you. Yes.
Let's start by appreciating and welcome the proposed program. But here, I think some of us need to be very cautious that we're moving towards elections. And the phases of elections might not. For me, I was going to say, if then you are not going to confirm that the proposal has been also firebombed with the bootstraps out of this without saying that you should, I think it's obvious that the chair also should be in a better understanding. Just from the communications committee, last week we couldn't deal with other matters because other political parties were dealing with the political work in terms of laying the foundation in terms of the election. And I imagine that probably we need to see how do we then make sure that it doesn't, because sometimes we get interrupted from our principals that we need to be there at that time. Having said that, the second point is the issue of the Salgawa. That in my last meeting that I attended with Salgawa here, the only technocrats, and I'm sure when they come back, the political principals who are dealing with the tourism specific may or program, they will be also be present so that also whatever recommendation and that sort of understanding in terms of how this process, whatever will be agreed upon, it does and is expressing in the policy decision making as people. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
One last question
from Jorge.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jeff. I wanted to get to number nine first. The summit. I don't know who we normally invite for the summit, but I was going to suggest that if we invite people from outside, but when you look at the list of those submissions that we had for the field, because I think we found some very interesting voices that we had never interacted with, and probably if we could identify some of them and make them really useful into the summit. And then secondly, number 10, the tourism in Dala. I'm looking at the purpose to assess and review long-term plans for the tourism in Dala. I just wondered, why do we confine ourselves to the tourism in Dala if we want to assess, long-term plans? When do we look at annual reports by the department annual report? I'm reminded by the fact that we received this thick document. Yeah, I saw this was the annual report of the department, but that reminds me now to. Have we looked at the annual report, the latest annual report at the institution? So when do we normally do it by the way?
Last year we did, but I think it comes after September, October, thereabouts.
Yes. We did look at the previous one. So this current financial year, we will look at the end of it. So
how do you need the cost term?
Yes, towards the end of the year, we'll be looking at the previous. Because, like, they come, like, a year. Because the first are tabled, you know. So it's the tabling process. By the time they come here, it's almost a year late. So, but we'll be looking at the BRR that will be considering both other reports and also looking forward to the following financial year. So they overlap like that. The next also just to add on the issue of Indaba. It's just look at how to improve it out, because if you look at the way it's been staged over the 24 years, we are not according to the international standards now. If you look at other African countries, they are introducing similar, at the moment we are like the best kind of a show in Africa. But if you look at development elsewhere in the continent, there are countries that are far ahead. That, for example, are incorporating conferences with exhibitions like happening with the ICB, WPM, and C2. So we want to see if SAT is planning a start that AC are on par with the international standard, because otherwise our program will become aid. So it just improve the in that sense.
If I recall, sort of getting into the issue of the budget, the head of state that for the department was always 10 of August, and the other one on the program, the oversight. I know that your Mr. Frolic, the honorable, does not want to be sort of committee that are in the oversight. And if you can send it in to pressurize them, that you must agree on that. Because they are parallel again putting the issue of prevention action. Fine. So what I'm then saying, you have to look into that, and you might get some kind of resistance. Is your motivation strong enough? Thank you.
Okay.
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 Thank you, Chair President. That was honorable. That we discussed that in the of the house. And also I think we don't need to put the wooden tape on the program. We tend to forget to put the wooden tape to the program. Maybe it's just because the funding is in the wooden tape. So there are many challenges in this program, which I think as this portfolio was supposed to help him to improve the effort to visit the wooden tape. So that you can see if this what is said about the wooden tape is the way it's said or not. As this department, there are many things that you can get in this process. To open oversight in this process of the DA. Yes, I want to say not because the wooden tape is DA.
Let us confirm some of the items and then put two items at bay so that we can ask for approval. Otherwise, it is going to be delayed, and we are going to find that we are not in a situation to have it approved. If it gets rejected this week, then next week we still have time. If it gets rejected next week, I think we've got the last week. So let us just play it at that. So I propose that we adopt the rest, and then where we have problems, we go back to the management committee and discuss the issues. Yes, sir.
I agree with you, Chair, but the point that has been raised by an honourable member,
We do have enough weeks to go to the place.
Okay, it's only that we are only left with three provinces that we haven't visited. So KZN, Free State, and Western Cape. So we just programmed this because we had thought, or we did not, because we did discuss it, but we thought maybe with the Western Cape we can be on other dates, because maybe it can be dating and back, but something that we're going to discuss later. But it's difficult to program here because we are guided by the fitting, yeah. So it's not necessary that they have to be like this. If you are left with three, they can be changed around as members of the team. But it must be Western Cape, KZN, or Free State.
I think the line is that let us prioritize Western Cape, then go to the Free State, and then to KwaZulu-Natal. All right?
Okay.
Can I finish? Okay, we do not have... let her move exactly and let me understand what
okay.
She's moving.
Thank you. No, I will repeat myself. I did say that. I think they're right at him up the point in terms of the topic that honorable member Marcus has raised. And I thought when we were saying that that's our property, we were taking from that.
Okay.
That's so that it should be followed by members of the in terms of compliance, in terms of the processes, that's how we're taking the decision.
Okay. So, move Lisuma, seconded then. Okay. Thank you very much. We are not going to have time for considering those minutes, but the minutes have been circulated. So at the following meeting, we shall assume that they have been read, and then we shall just ask for somebody moving and somebody seconding. Will that be okay with us?
Okay.
No,
yes,
it will
be okay for us, but also in terms of the court of duty last week, I don't know from my this office, I think this is what is happening to the government. I have to be here, not resident. I'm sure in the minutes we can trust.
Well, let us fix that when we read the minutes. Yes. And it will be... Yeah, and then we will fix it at that stage. Okay, thank you very much for your attention, and this meeting is adjourned. May I have a member of the ANC just remaining, because we are not having time for the television.
Maybe we can talk maybe they say 2 days, then
say
another 2 3 days.
Thank you very much.